Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. By Bhagwan's grace, we are in the second Vahini that Bhagwan had so lovingly written. In fact, earlier I mentioned once that Swami had so painstakingly written, and a listener wrote back saying, "No, Swami did it with so much love. You can say that Swami has so lovingly written." Wow, beautiful. Yes, everything that the Lord does is only out of love. I think there is nothing, no act of the Lord that is bereft of this supreme virtue. And it is so beautiful to reflect on everything that He did as an act of supreme love. So yes, the Vahini that Bhagwan wrote with great love for humanity, and here He took upon the role of a devotee. He Himself posed the questions and Himself offered the solutions, the panacea to our problems. So we were discussing chapter 4 of Sandhya Nivarini. In the previous episode we had chapter 4.1. These segments are what we have done just to break the chapter into smaller parts for ease of discussion. In the previous session, Bhagwan was emphasizing to the devotee how it is so important to practice and how he is so happy when he sees that all the beautiful knowledge, all the wisdom that he was sharing was being translated into action and not just left at the level of the head by the devotee. And Swami said, if that really happens, I don't mind doing this any number of times and answering any number of questions. And Bhagwan goes on to end in the previous segment saying that it is not my mission to be silent, even if people are not understanding. It must be communicated once, twice, and if necessary, many more number of times. And that is what I will do. If I continue to speak, the reality will be understood by all. Yes, the concepts of spirituality need much more contemplation. If to pass an exam in the worldly sphere, we spend X amount of energy. These are lessons, not just on how to earn your bread, but it is about how to get the most of life, and definitely it needs utmost effort. So we go on to 4.2 segment of Sandhya Nivarini, and Swami has blessed today three former students of His university. Every week it is left to Swami whom He is going to send, and today we have Brother Bhargav, Brother K.M. Ganesh, and Brother Srinivas Rao. So we will see how Swami shares whatever He wants us to contemplate on this beautiful Thursday. So let's listen to chapter 4.2.
Swami, we are like lumps of iron. To shape ourselves into instruments of the Lord, we have to confine to the fire so many of our thoughts and undergo any number of hammer strokes. Only then can the iron be molded. Therefore, in order to create instruments out of us, you have to take so much trouble. You have said that this is your duty. Now please tell me about the chit which you mentioned last month.
Yes, chit also has another name, Shuddha Sattva, that is, pure consciousness. It is as opposed to the impure consciousness as vidya is to avidya. Impure consciousness is inherent in the pure as much as darkness is inherent in light. Since many words are spoken, don't get confused, my dear boy. Vidya, avidya, jnana, ajnana, shuddha sattva, malina sattva, all indicate the same idea, not different concepts. I shall ask you another question. Have you heard the opposite of the word prakriti?
I have heard the word, Swami. When I studied grammar, I had learnt that the opposite of prakriti is vikriti.
What does vikriti mean?
Vikriti means vikaram, that which has changed. Agni is the original. The derived Telugu word is agni. Similarly, yama, jamma, yajnam, jannam, and so on.
So also, the Lord's prakriti is known as vidya, and its derived or lower form or vikriti is known as avidya. For vidya or shuddha sattva, avidya or malina sattva are the lower forms.
How is that, Swami? Vidya is effulgent in the Lord and avidya is inherent in vidya. That is to say, the universal collective cosmic principle is in the Lord, and in it the individuals appear as different because of the power of avidya shakti, which is inseparable and resplendent. For the Lord is all-powerful one. Therefore, that one truth is the basis or foundation for the universal and the particular, the totality as well as apparent parts. This is the meaning, isn't it, Swami?
That is it. That is why the Lord is referred to as Satya and Brahman. This Satyam is Akhanda or indivisible, Advitiya or non-dual, and Ananda or bliss. In the Upanishads, this indivisible Satya, associated with the unmanifested Maya Shakti, is called Ada, which is generally known as Purna. The manifested Maya Shakti associated with indivisible Satya is called Idam, and this too is referred to as Purna. This is the secret of the mantra Purnamada Purnamidam.
Oh, what a fine teaching! Just like giving unto the hand a fruit peeled and ready to eat. The Purna, referred to as the manifested collective consciousness, is inherent in the Purna, which is indivisible truth associated with unmanifested Maya. This is what you spoke of, is it not?
That's all. It is on account of this that we say, Vasudeva Sarvam Idam, Sarvam Kalu Idam Brahma. The words Vasudeva and Brahma are not different at all in their essence. Did you understand?
It is all like nectar, Swami. But so far, you have not told me who I am.
This is enough now. Next month, I shall solve your doubts with illustrative examples. Grasp well what has been told and practice. Don't forget and lay aside. Meditate on it. Well, you can take leave now.
So, I think it is one of those segments where there are a lot many Sanskrit words, and definitely it needs a lot of attention to the words that Swami has used. In fact, when I was reading the original Telugu and then translating it into the English, that is an exercise that we do in every episode, so that we go back to the original and we ensure that the English that we are now using, this script, is as true to what Bhagwan had written. So here Bhagwan begins by talking about chit, but before that Swami says, to shape ourselves into instruments of the Lord, we have to confine to the fire so many of our thoughts and undergo any number of hammer strokes. Only then can the iron be molded. And there the Bhakta says, in order to create such instruments out of wood, you have to take so much trouble, Lord. And you say, Swami, that this is your duty.
Mm.
I think that is something very beautiful, where we see every time Bhagwan going to that extent, if that particular incident, if that particular occasion can be used to shape our buddhi, can be used to chisel our ego, he will definitely do it, because he is here only to create a beautiful instrument out of us. And as the devotee says, Swami, this you see your duty. I remember one occasion when Swami was sitting outside and the bhajans were over, and one aarti was already given, and Swami continued to sit, and then suddenly Swami asked for a program. I think some boys had come for a program, but Swami had already taken aarti, and it was thought it was not going to happen. But then Swami, out of his immense compassion, asked for the program, and then the program began. And then we had another aarti. And when the warden then told Swami, you underwent so much of shrama, you know, you underwent so much of trouble.
Yeah.
Swami said, oh, idi shrama kaadu bangaru, idi na prema. This is prema. This is not shrama for me. This is, everything is love only for me. So I think that is how Bhagwan says, love without duty is divine. And I think that is what he practiced and showed us at every point of his earthly sojourn.
Again, coming back to the hammer strokes, remember we always used to have one Balvika story where basically whatever the Bhakta is telling, whenever you walk the path, you have to get a lot of hammer strokes. Then only you will get finally. So I remember this very sweet story where this one boy, he's a dunce, he's a very person of very dull intellect. He was not able to do anything. But that perseverance and that hard work, he continued. So like the way you told, suddenly Swami will, out of the immense compassion, he will do something which will open up something, some vista inside you, and you will get to some understanding. So the story goes that this boy actually is very, very dejected, and he just leaves. His mother tells, okay, you go out and see what can you do for yourself, because you're not able to study well, you're not able to get any marks, you're not able to do anything in this life productive. So he just, with that thought in his mind and thinking about what to do, how to do, with that intensity, he'll be walking. Then the story goes that he goes to a well. He sits on the well and inside of the well, and he'll be very dejected and deep in deep thought. And suddenly he sees that some ladies are coming and they're drawing water out of the well. And there is a stone on which the water is drawn out. He sees the string which pulls the water out. He sees very deep indentations. The deep marks are made on the stone.
Yes.
And the stone is very strong actually. So you cannot actually break a stone. But this particular string is nothing but made of a cloth. But repeated motions, repeated drawing of water over a period of time, this particular string has made deep marks, might be a few inches deep, on a stone which is very, very hard. So he realizes that, see, a stone can be broken, or a mark can be made on a stone. Why not my mind? My mind is not as dull as a stone, as jada as a stone. So he takes that lesson from it. Means, if you are sincere in your path, God will give you, will open up some intuition, seeing something in front of you. So for this boy, this particular incident where he sees the marks on the stone gives him so much of inspiration, that inner strength. He goes back to his home and then he prepares a lot, like very, does a lot of hard work and shines in his studies. So like that hammer stroke for him, the final hammer stroke for him was that incident where he went to this well and realized seeing that stone. So, like, what I understand from this is, maybe you keep your practice on, at some point of time, you will get it when you're supposed to get. Swami says, whenever the time comes, you will get it what you're supposed to get. So, we should actually keep doing our efforts.
Absolutely. I think, in fact, Swami says that there is no one who's exempt from doing action. Even the divine, when he takes a human form, even though there is no obligation for the divine to undertake any action, but the divine also acts for the sake of humanity. And Swami says there is no other way to purify one's body, one's mind, to become one with the Atma without undertaking action. Action is the only way you can purify the Chitta, Swami says. Chittasya Suddhaye Karmane, isn't it? That's what it is said in the Upanishads. So, that is what one has to be engaged in. And
The catch is, the karma itself should not become a binding factor. The rope is given to climb, not to tie it around your neck.
So
that's why clear understanding is important.
Absolutely.
Same karma should not become a snake.
So, karma, Swami says, should be along with Tyaga. In fact, Swami mentions very beautifully in one discourse about Tyaga and Bhoga. And Swami says that once you do your karma without ego, once you do your work without ego, and once you engage in all your activities without attachment, then all your karma is imbued with Tyaga, and that is how, even though you are in the world, but you have combined Bhoga and Tyaga. You enjoy the world, but you're not attached. You do the work, but you do it without ego. So there is the confluence of Tyaga and Bhoga. And that is the way towards yoga. That is what is yoga, ultimately, Swami says.
Here, I just want to think loudly, and I really want your inputs also in this. We are so used to that identity. Now, when it comes up, even when we are reading this, we have to let go of I. When I say I want peace, Swami says I is ego, want is desire. You remove I and want, the peace is there. Right? Swami has told this. Now, the thing is, how to consciously do it in the sense we don't lose interest in what we are doing. Somehow, that interest in whatever is we are doing is what makes us do the thing. Now, if the identity is gone, suppose whatever action, suppose I'm a cardiac surgeon. Okay, now I've identified that I want to be the best surgeon. Suppose that would have been a motivation in which you have started. And suddenly, as we progress, as we mature in our understanding of what life is all about, and this fact comes that you should let go of your identity because it is limiting your definition of who you are. You should not define. The whole idea is to remove, if you read the whole particular chapter in that context, is to forget that identity that we are holding on to, because we are universal. Fundamentally, we are universal. Fundamentally, we are God. Where do we start from? So, where do we start that? Because, okay, I gave the example of a cardiac surgeon. Suppose I love doing what I'm doing because there are beautiful things attached to it. You are saving life. Okay. Now, the profession in which you are engaged in, it is so noble.
Yes.
So you have a drive. Every day morning that you get up, you have a motive that today at this, these hands that God has blessed me with is going to save lives.
Yes.
So that drives you.
Yes.
Now, what would be a transition to say that everything that I do is an offering to God? So, with the same interest.
Yes. In fact, that reminds me of the story of Antony. Swami used to give this violin maker, Antony, who used to take 1 year to make one violin. And people used to tell him, what is the point of you making just one violin in an entire year? How are you going to sustain yourself? This is not the way you can lead your life. And Antony said that the one who has made me and made everything around me is perfect. And does not matter how much time it takes, but since I am doing it for him, whatever I make should be perfect. And so he never gave up that pursuit of perfection.
In that, correct.
And I feel, going by your example of the doctor, now the doctor, if he feels that I have to do these surgeries because, you know, if I do well and if I earn a good reputation, then apart from me earning a lot of money, I will also probably in 4 years, maybe I will become a senior consultant, and maybe in 6 years I might become the head of the department. This can be in his mind. So this is one approach.
Yeah.
The other approach is this knowledge that has come to me is purely the grace of the divine.
Yes.
And today is a very beautiful day. I don't know whom God is going to send. And let me see how God guides me to use this knowledge that he has given to save whomever he wants to be saved. Yes. And let me do it as an offering to him. Your boss becomes God. So yeah, you want to do it the best that you can. And you will not be thinking, no, let me do these kind of surgeries, because if I do these kind of surgeries, then I'll get a better reputation, then I'll get, you know, better chances of me getting a promotion. I will not think in on those lines. Or I will not do, okay, let me try to do this kind of a surgery because this actually is more paying for me. Or if I do this kind of surgery, then I can do a research on this. There are so many ways I can think, but I can also think, no, I am just here to do God's work, whatever comes my way. I will do it to the best of my ability as an offering to the divine.
So yes, the first fundamental premise is we adore, we love God to begin with.
Yes.
That has to be there, because
yes,
without that,
oh,
because
yes,
if the why is strong, if the why is clear,
yes,
everything falls in place.
Yeah, it starts with Daiva Preeti.
Daiva Preeti.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but just add to you, as you told, that cardiac surgeon, sometimes he succeeds, sometimes he falters also.
Yeah.
So in that case, what you do? Will you offer that also to him? So there's this nice story in Satcharitra, Sri Sai Satcharitra. The one devotee will be coming to meet, to have darshan of Shirdi Sai Baba. Before that, he goes to a place where he meets one more great saint called Thimbiya Swami. So Thimbiya Swami, what he does, he says, Shirdi Baba is my, like my brother, you please take this offering from my side and gives beaten rice. So give it to him on my behalf. So while traveling, the story goes that while traveling, they reach one particular brooklet, and then they'll think, okay, let us drink some water. And someone suggests that, no, water should not be drunk on empty stomach. You should have a little bit of something to eat and then we'll drink water. So by, without their knowledge, they all sit together and eat this beaten rice, which is supposed to be sent by a very great saint to Shirdi Baba himself.
Mm-hmm.
So these people feel very bad, like, what is this? He has sent this to him and we have finished it on the way. And to add to it, to their woes, Thimbiya Swami sends a telegram that
I'm sending
this gift to you. Be ready to accept it.
Oh my God.
So when they reach there, Shiva is ready. Come on, where is the gift, my brother? So this will be shivering. What to do? Then they feel very, very sorry, and they say, very sorry, Baba, that we totally went out of our mind. We stopped somewhere, we ate it, we're very sorry. They profusely feel bad about it. Then Shirdi Baba tells one statement, I remember in the Shirdi Sai Satcharitra book also, I think that's the only statement which is in bold. Every other statement, the book is at least the book which I generally read. Other pages in the book are generally in normal font, but this is in bold, where he says that, why should you take doership for whatever happens, whether it is good or bad? If you feel that it is done by me, nothing will touch you. So might be it's very difficult to immediately get it, because how is it possible that, oh my God, I do something wrong, it is done by God only, not me. But by going by the word of Shirdi Baba, actually, if we start believing it and start actually thinking very strongly about it. Probably, I don't know, we have to still practice, we are still on the way. Because when he has said it is not wrong, when we actually practice it, probably a time will come that, where Swami says, yes, dharma becomes natural to you.
Yes.
When you actually become one with God. So even the cardiac surgeon in this case, might be he might succeed, he might falter, he might do anything. Yeah. But a stage will come where he really offers everything to the God and say, it is you only, whether it is good or bad.
Yes.
So might be a stage will come.
In fact, that is a stage, I think. Once you have this approach, then whatever is the outcome also, it will not affect you.
Effective.
So earlier, if you're trying to do an operation, it doesn't succeed, then you get tensed, you know, then you have so many other repercussions that will affect you very greatly.
And thinking about that, you won't be able to concentrate on the work at hand.
But here you know that, you know, I have done everything as per him, his will, and I have done it to the utmost of my ability, only for him. So whatever is the outcome also, it is his grace. That also is grace.
So fundamentally, what is there in our hand is our attitude of love and a sincerity, which is very important.
Absolutely.
Because you are very, there's no excuses now.
Yes.
Okay, you have given your best.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's it.
Absolutely.
But we should be sure in our heart that we are given our best.
Absolutely. That's what sincerity is.
We can't deceive ourselves.
No, that is why sincerity is, that's what the definition is sincere. You know, you cannot cheat your conscience.
Yes.
Okay. Honesty is the best policy. So sincerity, utmost sincerity.
Absolutely.
But I have seen that many cardiac surgeons who come to Swami's institute also, leading heart transplant surgeon, Dr. Jivanandam and Dr. Venugopal, see, these are the people who have achieved the highest in their career,
profession.
And maybe when they started, they wouldn't have had all these thoughts about, you know, God doing through them and all. But you reach a point where actually you know that there is something beyond this.
A higher force.
A higher force that is acting through you. Because all your intelligence, everything is in place.
Mm.
But there is something else that is making you move automatically doing things.
Mm.
So then you probably realize, just as you asked, where do I begin?
Mm.
Where you begin is where your efforts end actually. It's no longer you.
No. Mm.
That's from, and why do you see all these people so humble? Looking at them itself, we become humble.
Right. Mm.
People in those professions, who have reached the pinnacle of their glory, they are so humble towards Bhagwan. Then that means there is something more for us also to, you know, contemplate on.
True, sir.
Absolutely.
Very true.
In fact, I think in everybody, in their own careers, in their own professions, in their own disciplines, there comes a time when suddenly you find that with all the knowledge, all the skill and all the instruments at your disposal, suddenly you face a problem which is beyond you, and that is when you,
I think God has decided to enter your life.
Yeah.
to make it
more obvious. Sorry, I mean, he was always there, but now he sort of starts, the realization begins that it is not me all the while, it was somebody else, and now he's just giving me that opportunity to come to that realization.
See, Dr. Bhatt also wrote an article in one of the hospital magazines. The title of the article is Surgeon Cuts and God Heals.
Yes.
So a topmost surgeon is saying that because he himself didn't have really great ideas about spirituality and all this until he came to Swami. Only when he came to Swami, he didn't have any spiritual background. Just by seeing Swami and loving Swami, he understood what it is to surrender.
Absolutely.
That led him to experiencing real bliss while doing his seva
service
in the hospital.
Oh,
the real joy comes from this attitude of surrender to what may be you are.
Absolutely. I mean, he was so joyful in serving, and the service gave him so much ananda that, you know, even when it came to a stage where he was getting old and he needed little help, he decided to stay in the hospital so that it is easy for him to continue seeing patients and do his work.
No, he also said to Swami, Swami offered him a very good, quarters in the hospital complex. he did not move into it.
Yes.
He said, Swami, let me stay in the same ward as my patients. I also want to go through what my patients go through.
Wow.
And I was a witness to those days when he was in the hospital, one of the isolation wards rooms.
Yes.
And he was continuing to do his work from the bed.
Yes.
Even though he was, you know, aging and signs of aging was seen in him.
Yes.
He was continuing to guide his students. This is the one that actually are motivating forces for the hospital today also.
Mm.
All his Dr. Bhatt's students still come and pay respects to him, and in his name they do a lot of good work. They come back to pay gratitude to this hospital only because of he. What did they see? They would have seen such a big man being humble towards Swami. Swami once said, you would wonder why I give importance to the so-called VIPs whom we address as VIPs and all, or the big politicians or anybody. Swami said, these are the people who have already achieved something in their life. They have reached certain very high positions in their careers. There will be a lot of people who will be following them.
Mm-hmm.
And if these people are close to Bhagawan, say, then the people who are following them will be able to pay attention to Swami. Oh, if my leader is humble towards Bhagawan, then there must be something in that Bhagawan. Even those who do not know about Bhagawan will start getting attached to Swami.
Just like now Sunil Gavaskar in a recent interview mentioning that, you know, whatever he is, it is only because of the way Swami has guided his life.
Very openly he tells everybody,
candidly
where on every
mentioned.
Platform.
So, you know, so in India, cricket is a religion, and so it rings something in the heart of every person who reads that article, you know, whether you believe in Swami or not. But when you feel if Sunil Gavaskar had this to say about Swami, you know, then you'll at least be more open to things of this nature. So moving on here, Bhagwan then tells about Chit. In fact, in the previous chapter itself, Swami tells, I'll tell you about Chit, but the first segment, Swami was only sharing with the devotee that I'm so happy that you have taken the trouble to understand and translate what I have said. And now he goes into Chit, and then Swami says that Chit has another name, it's called Shuddha Sattva, pure consciousness. And it is opposed to the impure consciousness as Vidya is to Avidya. So, of course, once this concept begins, after that you have to read, I think, this chapter two, three times. To really understand what Bhagwan is trying to convey.
What struck me the most was that you say that the Shuddha Sattva, the Vidya. The Vidya is what is actually there. And the avidya, which you say ignorance, is actually part of vidya. Inside vidya.
It is inside vidya.
It's mind-boggling. It is very mysterious. But I remember once, like one of these sessions in Kulwanthal in front of Swami, one of the VIPs were talking about this, and then he mentioned one very interesting point. He told that this concept as such is found in nature. No one else has found it other than our sages, rishis and saints and seers. He says that in Mundaka Upanishad, there's a place it comes where it says that the creation is like the spider. You know, it seems the specialty of a spider is it can weave the web and withdraw it back also if it wants.
Mm-hmm.
It's mentioned in the Mundaka Upanishad. Mm-hmm. I remember like he told that the thing which closest to what Swami is telling Vidya, Avidya, which no one else was able to find out, is there in our Upanishads, which says that the same this particular thing can be explained with this symbolism of a spider. Whenever it act will, from within itself, it generates the web, the threads of the web, and then takes it back inside. So what he was mentioning was that the avidya is nothing but the making the web. And then when it says, okay, now it's enough,
yes,
takes it back.
True.
And then, like what Swami says, Vataputra Sai, it'll be only the only one who'll be there in the whole universe, whole creation. And then when he decides again, he's
true. That's a very beautiful,
very, very beautiful
analogy. In fact, if you see here, that is what Swami is telling. Vidya is effulgent in the Lord.
Yes.
Avidya is inherent in in Vidya. Vidya is inherent in Vidya. And then Bhagwan goes on to explain that this universal collective cosmic principle that is in the Lord. I mean, that is the Lord in a way. The universal collective cosmic principle. In it, when the individuals appear as different, when each thing appears as different because of the external characteristics of name and form, that is the power of avidya shakti.
Yes, maya.
That is the power of maya in a way. Yes, that is the power of avidya shakti. But vidya and avidya are inseparable. They are part of the thing. As he says, you know, everything just, it is all, the Lord, as Swami says, it is that one truth which is the basis or the foundation. The totality, it is the totality as well as it is the apparent part, Swami says.
Correct.
It is the totality. And here then Bhagwan has so beautifully explained this Purnamada Purnamidam, where Swami is telling that that indivisible totality, that is Satya, that is Brahma, that is called Purna, because that is full. And this indivisible Satya, when it is associated with the unmanifested Maya Shakti, when the Maya Shakti has not manifested, then that is called Ada. So when we say Purna Mada, Purna Midam, Purna Mada,
that is infinite, this is finite.
No, both are infinite.
Both are infinite only. Where what Swami is telling is, Purna Mada is, Purna is the totality, you know, that individual Satya Brahma. When that is associated with the unmanifested Maya Shakti, that is Purna Mada. And when that indivisible Satya Brahma is associated with the manifested Maya Shakti,
that is Ida.
That is Ida.
Idam.
So Purna Mada, Purna Midam. So both are Purna only.
Correct.
Yeah. When it is unmanifested, it is Ada. When it is manifested, it is Idam.
Yeah. See, that's what I remember. I think Gandikota Subramanian Sastri Garu, he has mentioned once to his son, Jeeva Subbarao Garu, he told that whatever Swami says actually is Veda Vakyam.
Yes.
You don't need to go back to Vedas and check. So this this concept, exactly what you're telling, this used to fascinate Swami Vivekananda. There's a particular symbolism of two birds on a tree. This is exactly the way what we are just discussing. He quotes it many times. It says that it comes in Mundaka Upanishad again, that there is a tree. The tree is the body, the tree of life. There are two birds on it. One bird is just sitting and doing nothing, just witnessing. The second bird, the first bird is on the top on a higher branch. The second bird is on the lower branch and is trying to go around and taste the fruits. Some fruits are bitter, some fruits are sweet, some fruits are sour. It's feeling bad, it's feeling happy, it's feeling everything. And then a point comes where it sees the bird is just sitting on the top, perched on the top, higher branch. Then it says, oh my God, that the bird looking so serene and calm. What is this? Why am I not like this? And then when he actually goes and realizes, it sees that this bird which is seeing is nothing but the reflection of that bird only. The higher bird was nothing but the actual bird, and this bird was thinking that it is true, but it is just a reflection of the bird which is sitting there and witnessing everything.
The higher bird is a witness.
Higher bird is just witnessing everything. Yeah. The lower bird is trying to enjoy the apparent world around. So he says, Vivekananda says the same thing, that is Vidya, this is Avidya. But when you realize that, oh, that is nothing but I'm just a reflection of that. Like we had this example where if you climb the coconut tree, your shadow also climbs it. The same way, this is again a symbolism where it says that the two birds are inseparable. They're not different, but they apparently look different because of the ignorance of the lower bird. Once it sees the higher bird and realizes, oh my God, we are same, then automatically that this particular ignorance just goes. And then it understands that both are same. And it also becomes serene and stops eating the bitter, sweet, sour fruits. Basically, the results of our karma, whatever we get, we don't get affected by it. So this is again, whatever Swami says is, whatever he says is Veda Vakya. All these things are already there in all the Upanishads.
Swami himself clarified once when boy said, whatever Swami said is in the Vedas and Upanishads. And Swami immediately corrected him, saying, what Swami said is not in the Vedas, not in the Upanishads. What Swami says is Veda, is Upanishad.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, it is so true. You have only Swami elaborating on what is already there, just for the ease of our understanding.
Correct.
So, all these concepts, you find it in Isavasya Upanishad, you find it in Mundaka Upanishad. I think Upanishads are the essence of Indian spiritual thought. And so beautifully, so Swami is telling here that there is nothing which is not Purna. Here Swami brings in that lower and higher, where Swami says Vikriti.
Yeah. Mm.
So the Lord is Prakriti. Swami says the Lord's Prakriti is known as Vidya. The Lord is Vidya.
Mm.
And a lower form is the Avidya. Vikriti Avidya. That's all. It's just a lower form. In fact, Swami says there is nothing like also untruth also. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya when we say, it is nothing like untruth also actually. It is just a lower truth to a higher truth. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere, everything is only light.
Yes.
Everything is only love. It's a question of just when it is in its lower form. I think when the principle gets manifested, so there is some amount of, I would say, the play of name and form comes in.
Yes.
As Bhagwan explained, then it becomes a lower form, and when all that thing is shed, then it becomes that Shuddha Sattva. Then it's just that higher form.
If you remember, there's a very nice experience of Bhagya sir, one of our his faculty in our Department of Management and Commerce.
Yes.
He says that this is exactly the way it is. That he says that once he was sitting and trying to meditate in front of Swami in Mandir. He was sharing with us some time back. And then he says, I'm closing my eyes and thinking about the Lord, and this Lord going to come out, and why should I miss his darshan? That dilemma was in his mind, and then Swami comes out. He doesn't realize that Swami comes out. He's sitting in closing his eyes and trying to concentrate. Suddenly he sees someone comes and taps on his head. He opens his eyes, sees Swami is there. Swami goes, no problem. Beto. And then he just goes. And then he tells, it's like some fascinating experience. He says, after that, he had an experience that everything is getting absorbed into him. I don't know. When I read the spider experience, at will it'll generate the web and then take it back. His experience was that whole universe is going and getting absorbed into him. And he says at one point of time it was so ridiculous that I saw even Swami inside me. Swami coming inside me. And he says the whole universe has got absorbed into me. And then he says, I don't know how I went to the class. He stayed for some 1 week or 10 days, that state of existence.
Wow.
He went to class, he taught, he did all his daily work, everything he did. But he was totally unaffected by it. He never bothered what is happening around him. And then after some 1 week, 10 days, Swami comes, like for darshan he is sitting, Swami comes and says, Shanti. Like he just waves that with his hand, okay, now you come down. And then he says, I came down and realized what experience I went through. So when we read that Vidya is the source and Avidya is what comes forth, and then it has to go back and dissolve. I think this is a very beautiful experience which sir had, where he experienced it firsthand, where everything got absorbed into him, and he got a glimpse of what is that Purna Madha.
Absolutely. In fact, Swami says, you know, when you, one way of understanding this mind, body and the Prajnanam, Swami says it is like concentric circles. Like you have the body is one circle, then the mind is a circle with a higher diameter.
Mm.
So it is a bigger circle. Inside is the body circle. The bigger circle outside it is the mind circle. And then the circle outside of that, outside the mind, is the Prajnanam circle, which is the consciousness. Swami says, so with time, you know, you have to expand. When the circle that is the body expands, it merges into the mind. And when the mind circle expands, you know, your mind becomes as vast as the ocean. And then once you feel that unity with everything, then it becomes one with the Prajnanam, with the consciousness. So that is the journey of everyone. Ultimately, everything is Purnam. But here, if I have to distill you know, this whole concept of what Swami was trying to convey in Maya Shakti, unmanifested Maya, manifested Maya, Purnamidam, Purnamada. See, ultimately the Swami is telling that it is on account of this that we say Vasudeva Sarvam Idam.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is divine.
Divine, yes.
That is what is being trying to convey. In the Upanishads are trying to decipher the nature that they see around them, and the sages come up with these beautiful concepts trying to understand. But ultimately, the final message is Sarvam Kalu Idam Brahma. Everything is divine. In fact, Swami says in one discourse, there are three tenets of Indian spiritual thought. One is the idea of karma. Karma is so central to the spiritual understanding of ancient sages and seers. Second tenet of Indian spirituality is the concept of God coming down as avatar. So if you believe in India, if you believe in India's culture, then you believe in the concept of karma. You believe in the concept of avatar. And the third is that God is present everywhere and in everything. I think that is the another central message. I think these are sort of the different ways Upanishads express
correct
these fundamental concepts of
you told Upanishad that anyway, I remembered one more very beautiful, very very interesting story of it comes in Chandogya Upanishad. The disciple is Svetaketu, the son, and Uddalaka is the father. So Svetaketu, Uddalaka sends his son for studies. So he goes and comes back and he gets puffed up with ego that I have learnt everything. That's again something very dangerous. So the father realizes that there is some problem. Then he asks, have you understood everything? And then Svetaketu says, yes, I have understood everything. Then he says, okay, so tell me what is that from which everything else comes? So he will not be able to answer the question. So he tells, come, I'll take you somewhere. He takes outside their ashram, and then he shows a beautiful banyan tree. Full it is, Purnam, like it's a beautiful, nice banyan tree. He says, see how full it looks. So yes, it looks very beautiful. Then he says, okay, take one fruit of it. Then he takes a fruit. It's again full. It's a round, nice red fruits there. So break it. So Uddalaka keeps telling Svetaketu to break the fruit. At a point, after a point, you cannot break it further. So he says, what is left? He says, nothing is left. He says, okay, can you break it further? He says, I cannot break it further. So what is finally left? Emptiness, there's nothing. Then he says, from this emptiness, which you say is actually emptiness, that whole beautiful full tree has come. So do you feel this is nothing? This is actually everything. So same, Purnamada, Purnamidam. In this small, the small dot of emptiness, if you actually see, that whole universe or the whole massive tree has come. So he says the best lesson is, be nothing. Then only you understand that you are everything. So
the real gap which has come now in the Kali Yuga, this is a very beautiful example. The real gap, unfortunately, is we believe only in tangible things. What is within the perception? The thing that you just now explained about Uddalaka, something even, for example, if you are to say a theist, if you believe in God, the reason many people are not able to take the first step is, in the first place, they want everything available as a proof or as an evidence. The thing of faith has to come first. In fact, one devotee had a discussion with Swami and he was saying, Swami, if you give me experience, I'll definitely have faith, Swami. Swami told, no, first you have faith, then I'll give experience. He told Swami, but how can I have faith without experience, Swami? Then it went on for some time, but Swami was very clear. You have faith first, I'll give you the experience. And of course, it goes on like that. Now, many people are still waiting for experience. Okay, something out of the world should happen and then I'll believe. Okay, and it is becoming more like an entertainment. That's why Swami, one of the discourse Swami is telling, when a person in India, it seems in some places, when a cobra bites you, they remove the poison, but just to check whether the blood is still poisoned with the poison, venom, they give green chili, it seems. If to eat, if the person is not feeling the taste of green chili, no, means poison is still there. Okay. So Swami says, until the person is still drenched with worldliness, he's running, chasing, and he's enjoying the worldly pleasures and all that, all this will not appeal. I mean, it is a waste of time, even to force. So a person who is running behind, it has to be voluntary. A person really should turn towards it, and then only it's useful. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, you want to enjoy, like a housefly, Swami says, if you're a housefly, you want to sit on the sweet, you want to sit in the dustbin also. That's not what, it's like neutralizing, and it's of no use. You would have spent 50 years saying that I'm a devotee, and you question yourself, why am I not still having that peace of mind? Why am I still having that desire to run? Because you have to let go. You have to let go of the lower taste. Then only you are ready to get the higher taste. So first is letting go. First is having faith. Then the experience comes. So this example that you gave, no brother, that is, I think it's from Upanishad. No, from the current state of the world is, you first show me, I want to experience, then I'll believe.
No, in this case also, first he gets everything. He says, I know everything.
I know.
Tells, no brother, you don't know everything. I'll tell you something more. And then again, coming back to our cardiologist's experience, a stage comes where he says, what more? I think I'm still, there is some hollowness within me.
Emptiness.
Then, like we were just discussing, emptiness is there. Then they will think about God. I agree with you. Like that's again a process.
It's a process.
You actually, might be, God will give you the, as you had told last time also, give you a long rope, give you that time, okay. After some time you'll get, there might be a time when it, finally, he says, okay, now you come.
If we are sincere, we are really sincere, no, it will definitely be there, honestly. But if we feel that we are sincere, but sometimes, no, we are not conscious. That's why the price of spirituality is continuous alertness. You have to be alert. Okay. And it's like walking on a razor edge. If you want it so badly, like even that example is there where the boy... he was put inside the water and he was not letting him go. And when he was totally, like, he almost thought that Guru is going to kill him. That's when he pushes him out of the water. And then first thing that he wants is oxygen. First thing he wants is air. If you have that level of intensity, then you will get it. That intensity, the sincere. Otherwise, it is just a discussion and it is just nice. Like you feel nice about it. Because when this discussion was going on, I was just contemplating. I became like the bird, I thought.
The bird. The higher bird.
higher bird. No, because I was seeing that any knowledge that we are pursuing, what is the benefit? That's what the human mind thinks, what it gives. It gives us an identity which cannot be harmed or touched by anything. It makes us Atma or God that we are fundamentally. Because if we are in the world, and if we have identified ourselves with this body, mind and the situation around us, we feel helpless. There are many times we feel helpless. And there's no way, we feel trapped. But there, only a human being can do that. I can imagine myself from seeing myself from far. As at that level of awareness that I'm also sitting in this room. Only a human, no animal can do it. We have that unique gift that when I close my eyes, I can actually visualize myself sitting. I can go away and I can separate myself. And this in day-to-day practice, no, when we are able to detach ourselves, where we are totally entangled in the environment or situation, that practice, no, gives us tremendous power. Yes. This observation, this thing of separating. Because otherwise, we are totally trapped in that.
Yes.
Yes.
As Swami says, when you sleep, you see dream, that is night dream, and this is daydream.
Yeah, this is daydream.
So,
luckily, we have something called dream, so that we can understand what dream is. Because many times I woke up from dream, almost thinking that, oh my God, I was falling from, and what a relief. So, oh, this is how it feels, and I feel that there is one more level of awakening which will happen, because God has given us that feeling. Yes. It is not any, I don't have to imagine, it is there. So that, and that should give us a faith.
And that this wakeful state is also a dream.
Yes.
When you wake up into that state.
That's it. This also is. So let us not take life so seriously.
Exactly.
But sincerely. I'm not saying there's a difference between being serious and being sincere. Yes. We have to be sincere.
So basically, I think, it is doing everything, but knowing what is permanent, what is temporary, and once you have that understanding, then you don't get really attached.
Yes.
But I still feel, even if you don't get understanding, don't feel bad. Leave it to, like, yes. You do your efforts, it'll come sometime, it'll yes. come. You don't need yes. to.
Like insight oh would dawns, no? Like yeah. it'll come.
Oh my God, I don't know. Oh, you're telling that this is real, this is unreal. I can't make out yes. between the two. Don't worry. Like you yes. just go ahead with your life, with your sincerity, with your whatever little effort you put, and it'll come.
If you see, even in these discourses, wherever Bhagavan has explained in depth these concepts, at the end of the discourse, he's come back to love.
Yeah, that's
he's
fundamental.
Come back to love.
That's fundamental.
Because ultimately, Swami says that once you feel the heartbeat of the cosmos in your heart, then even if you don't understand anything, ultimately, you know, your circle will expand.
Yeah.
The body that you think you are will expand once you start feeling for the other person.
Yes.
And once you start feeling for more and more people, more and more people, and think less and less of yourself, then you become one with the universal
yes.
self.
Yes.
You know, then the whole circle of the body becomes a circle of the mind. Yes. And then that is how you feel the unity with creation.
Yes.
Mm.
So I think if Swami says the simplest way to do is just try to become as selfless as yeah. possible. Become mm. selfless, become selfless, sacrifice. Swami says, see, there is antakarana. The antakarana, basically what we have all these organs. Organs are karanas, whatever, you know, the implements. So, antakarna, mana, buddhi, chitta, ahankara, they are the antakarna. And the outside organs are our eyes, ears, hands, whatever. If the antakarna follow the practice of tyaga, Swami says.
Mm.
Suppose...
Letting go.
Tyaga is imbued in our antakarna. Then, even if the eye notices something, the tongue eats something, because antakarna is following the path of tyaga, the eyes will not enjoy that bhoga.
But,
you know, the bhoga will not touch you actually. You can enjoy the world, but there should be tyaga inside. So if mano, buddhi, chitta, ahankara are into tyaga, then even if you enjoy the world, it will appear as bhoga, but you are actually into yoga.
Samadrishti. Swami calls it samadrishti.
Yeah. So I think that's the reason why I think Swami time and again in his discourses emphasized tyage neite
amritatva manushu.
There is no other way than, you know, sacrifice. So I think whether we understand all these concepts or not, at least if we see, okay, every day, what is my selfless quotient for today? Am I today little more selfless than what I was yesterday? What is it that I have sacrificed today wherein I thought less about myself and I thought about someone else more? And I think if you start doing these little things...
Like the rope cutting the rock.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, it'll happen. It's a daily cultivation.
It's a daily
cultivation. And wherever we are, we have to compete, or they say, you know, the best thing is to compete with yourself rather competing with others.
Absolutely.
It'll only lead to jealousy, or if the other person is too good, you'll lose confidence. So better is to compete with yourself and gradually progress.
Yes.
Definitely God will help us.
Yes. Yes. So I think, well, time is running out, so we have to bring this discussion, but well, it is so beautiful when all these obtuse concepts, you know, if you read the Upanishads, it's one thing, but when you read Swami's discourse, it is so amazing. Many times when I read now, I feel Swami's jumped 2-3 topics. It seems like that. But actually now when you read, then you see that what is it that Swami was trying to drive at? He was trying to convey, you know, because there are people at different levels of understanding.
Yeah.
And, you know, Swami was offering that package, you know. So, okay, maybe there was someone in the audience, he did not get what is vidya, what is avidya, you know, what is vikriti, what is prakriti. But then, you know, he just understood this one little thing about circle, or maybe he didn't understand this. Maybe he understood this thing about love. You know, this is something. So, I think he gave the same Upanishad. Every discourse was an elaboration of the Upanishads.
Upanishads.
It was only Vedanta. So, but he gave it in such amazing variety that, you know, everybody could take something for themselves and add that sweetness to their lives, actually.
It helps, you know, to... Actually, it simplifies our life.
Absolutely.
Simplifies it. Yeah. One of the discourses, like, which really recently I was going through, Swami has given the classification of human beings. Five types of human beings are there. So earlier, I mean, I have known that we are human aspect is there, divine aspect is there, animal aspect is there. Mm-hmm. In this discourse, Swami says, Manusha Daivatvam, that is like a human divine. Manusha Manushatvam, they are the people who follow the five principles of Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema. Then Manusha Dhanavatvam, people who are extremely wicked. There are some people you'll find wicked and they're very selfish. Okay. The Manusha Pashutvam, Kana Pina Sona. Swami uses the word Kana Pina Sona, that's it. Eat, sleep and just make merry. Then there's the fifth category also. Manusha Heenatvam. Heenatvam is even one level below animals, oh, where some people, suppose he's traveling in a boat and he doesn't like the other person, he'll puncture the boat. Even if he's going to drown along with the person, he doesn't mind. Okay, he's ready to hurt himself. There are certain people. So, I mean, now most of us are in combo pack actually. All will come together. So we have to enhance that, yes, that layer. We have to enhance the higher aspect or higher nature of us,
yes,
and let go of the lower nature.
Yes.
Because that is there in everyone. So it is more for introspection rather than judging others. No, he's a Danava, he's a Hina.
Oh, yes.
No, it is more for self-introspection and see there are certain things we have to, as we let go, no, the higher thing manifests more prominently. I mean, that's an experience that all of us have.
Yes.
Swami says, offer all your bad to me and take all the good from me. Because your bad won't touch me.
Correct.
He's so fired. That is the way to, you know, there is nothing like impurity.
Yes.
So if you offer it to Bhagavan, what we get is the purity back to us.
Yes. In fact, I mean, there is nothing like impure. That's what this Upanishad is saying. Everything divine is absolutely satyam and brahmam and chittam. So it's a question of we consciously not understanding it intellectually, but trying to see everything through that light.
The 4.1 was that, no? Practice.
No, even here also, if you see in the end, he says, finally, don't forget, meditate on it.
Yeah, contemplate, meditate.
He tells that. He doesn't leave that.
Yeah.
Try to grasp it. Grasp well.
Yes.
Many of the things that when we start practicing, no, actually the understanding dawns.
Yeah.
If you surely try to do intellectually, no, it confuses actually.
Absolutely.
The paralysis of analysis, we say.
Yes. So the bliss will come only from practice.
Practice.
Beautiful. So dear listeners, so do share with us how you think we can translate these beautiful messages into our lives. Share with us your journeys, your experiments with making vahinis the stream of your daily life and living. As always, if you have any queries, if you want to join these discussion sessions, please feel free, send in your comments, send in your queries. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send your feedback to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for being with us through this lovely session of diving into the nectar of His divine message. Thank you so much. Sayonara.